We had a very special chat. While we normally get the brand story and perspective, we flipped the switch and went straight to the source and spoke to the influencers. During the live portion of our very special fireside chat, we learned about the best outreach to get the yes, discussed budgets, explored the importance of relationships, and honestly, really dove into the business of being a creator. Top creators in the lifestyle, food, and travel shared their challenges and frustrations, but also provided such valuable insight on how best to work with creators. From campaign briefs to setting expectations. We had so many great questions come in after the live portion, and that is what you're just about to dive into, my friends. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for a little creator Q&A with Jeanette, Yvette, Ale, Jessica, Lorraine, and Shonda. All right. Welcome back, ladies. So excited to see you on the other end of the webinar. We've got tons of questions coming in. And well, we had a ton of questions that came in that I know everybody wants to get those answers for. So we will get the ball rolling. If one of you like is like, I've got this one, just definitely shout it out. If not, I will call on you. All right. Let's hit the ground running. How do you feel about working through affiliate networks versus direct with the brand? Do any of you have experience working with affiliate networks?
Yes, plenty.
Do you like it? No, yes.
In general, I would rather work directly with a brand. I understand why it might be easier for many brands and agencies to work through these networks, but usually payment is much lower, and I feel that it is so impersonal that it is very difficult to build a relationship through an automated platform.
Especially when we're talking about, for instance, Instagram posts, what's going to happen is they're going to click on, they're going to follow the brand, and then they're going to get accustomed to the brand, and then they're going to purchase. And so that's where it really becomes difficult. We're not getting all the affiliate sales coming in because especially if they're adding, if they're also doing third-party ads, they might see our post and then get served, you know, an ad on Facebook. And next thing you know, it takes several processes of seeing something to buy something. And we never got credit for that first part. There's just so much that goes into affiliates that doesn't make it really great as the one key factor for our payment.
Right. Also, if you do affiliates, I feel I suck at that. So my conversion rate is very small. I have tried it. But I feel that if somebody is successful at that, not only do they have to have a much larger following than I do across all boards, and I have like 300,000 across all different platforms. But also, if you're doing socks and then you're doing a blouse and then you're doing a you know, I tried one particular one that has a lot of, sorry, because it's a dog. When I'm looking down, I have a dog down there. So the thing is that the commission that you get is so tiny that you have to sell a lot of things. And then you're a salesperson. I don't like that. That's why I don't do direct sales. I tried it. I don't like it. It's not for me.
And I even have a product that I sell. And so I'll push it through my Instagram, but then I have so many other methods. My goal is to get them to do something else so they go through the funnel. And if anything, we're just one of the funnel starters.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think it also just kind of depends on the type of content that you're pushing out, right? So, you know, speaking of the funnel, if you're creating a how-to video versus like the, hey, let me introduce you to this brand, like the goal behind whatever it is that you're creating is completely different. So you can't assume, I mean, to your point, Jessica, as well too, it takes many times to see something before someone takes that action and like makes a purchase and does all of that. Shonda, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I just use kind of affiliate as kind of like my play income. And I just do it on my blog pretty much there that if, you know, someone comes to my blog and they like, you know, what I'm wearing in that picture or they like the pot that I use, then they take action from there. But it just makes sense at that time. Here's the post about this thing and I'm sharing like all whatever's in the picture, whether it's in my house or on my kitchen table or, you know, what I'm wearing when I went here, those links and those products show there. So it just makes sense because I know I shop that way. Like, oh my gosh, what shirt is that you're wearing? And then it's easy for me to click and buy from there. So it kind of just takes care of itself. But there certainly are bloggers who simply just living that way. But like Lorraine says, their audiences are kind of, they've been, I guess, groomed to know that this particular blogger, you know, is kind of your source for like what's best to shop. And there are some, you know, influencers that you just kind of go to for that. So it's a craft in itself, and their audiences are here for that.
It's all about the approach. All right. So would love to hear the influencer's thoughts on, here's another affiliate question. We'd love to hear the influencer's thoughts on an affiliate structure to guarantee that they have some skin in the game versus a flat fee. But from what the response before, it doesn't sound like, or maybe it's more of when you use the affiliate structure. But do you guys feel like that's what you have to have in order to feel like you have, quote unquote, you know, some skin in the game?
I just don't do affiliates, period. Mm-hmm. That's it. But that's me. It's as Shonda said, I'm sure it's great for a lot of people. It's just not what my business model, zero.
I do it because I have the intention to help people. So there's my blog post, and if you want to use what I've used, it's down here. So you can go and buy it, but not as a revenue for me.
It's an extra after that. And same thing, like I use the same face wash every single day, and I could be doing that. But if I'm also promoting a face wash and then hair products and then that, and suddenly I'm all invested in 10 affiliates, then every day I'm having to share 10 affiliates, and it's overwhelming the people. Whereas if I can add it in completely natural, that's great. And I usually get that after having worked in a paid capacity. And then it's better. And also if your product is on shelves in a store, it's much less likely that I want to do that, because you're more likely to go and like impulse buy at a store, because you're, you know, that light bulb, oh, I saw her post about that.
Yes.
Here it is. And there's no way to track that.
And to your point, then you can't, you can't track that at all, right? You think I want credit.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the best way to get in front of you to pitch you an idea? Is it DMs, emails, other? What do you like to see for an intro?
I prefer emails. I prefer emails. Mm-hmm. And if it really is for a paid collaboration, I would prefer that you go through Joanna first, Joanna Voss, my agent. I think it expedites everything. You'll get all the rates for the deliverables. It will move things so much quickly. But I do read my DMs. I've had collaborations that start that way. I just think that email keeps it more organized, professional, and it tells me that you actually took a few minutes to look into my contact information, which is easily accessible on all my platforms.
Yeah.
I don't have Joanna in my bio just because I ran out of space. So she's the person I'm going to forward it to, but it's okay. I don't expect you to go find my agent just nowhere on my thing. So just send me an email, preferably not a DM, and then probably you'll get forwarded to Joanna.
Now, what do you like to see in that intro? Is it something... what do I want to say? There are a lot of brands who give you like their entire journey and story in like that first intro email. Like, hi, my name is Katya. I'm from Grin. We're a creator platform and want to collab. I myself am a bullet point person, but I'd be interested to learn from you guys. What do you like in that intro when you are being approached, even if you do push them off to Joanna?
I think it's all about the research that they do on their end and them knowing who you are and saying, we've been following you on Instagram. We love that you love healthy Mexican style recipes. We love how, you know, you share your family memories and family recipes. And we know that you naturally use this product, and we know that it would be a great collaboration, where it's like, it's a natural and it's a win-win, and they've obviously done their research. It makes me respect them and want to figure out a way to work with them. But, you know, what's funny is sometimes you get the really random ones where on my Instagram, it's like Mexican recipe / Yvette, but then I'll get like, dear Mexican,
I know that story. Yeah.
You're like, that's very straightforward.
I get that.
That would probably answer the converse one of what is the hard no for you when
dear
you see
Mexican.
Someone. Dear Mexican, something that's very not personal. Is there a huge turnoff aside from that from any one of you that
the you DMs that start with "Yo, we liked,"
or "Hi, love," and yeah, I've never even met you. Hi, love, and I'm like, "Who are you?"
That's weird. Yeah.
I love that.
It's funny.
Okay, how do you propose tracking ROI with influencers? Do you get that question from brands like? Or I'm assuming that you have some metrics within kind of your media. Is it a media
kit?
Oh my gosh.
Media kit.
Media kit. Yeah. I kept wanting to say package. It's not media package. I'm thinking Amazon. I've got that in the brain. But yeah, in the media kit, do you have metrics that you share out to show that there is a return on investment in the partnership that they're kind of teeing up for you?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a return of investment that it's detailed in the media kit, but it's definitely your analytics and your reach, your social media presence, all of those stats. But I always recommend for anybody who's never heard of it, it's like my biggest lifesaver is Influence Kit. And it's like this magical place where you can, after a campaign, you can add in all your links for your blog, for your social media, and it calculates all your analytics and it makes it in a beautiful report. And it's live, it's up to date. So if a brand asks you, you know, a month after your campaign, what are your analytics? It's like a one easy place to give them. And say if, and for some reason in 6 months, it goes viral because it went crazy in Pinterest, you can go back to the brand and say, look it, this is still like performing really well. So it's just a great place that automates it for you. And I mean, it's just the biggest lifesaver because to me, that was the biggest headache, you know, can you, and it sometimes still happens where a brand's like, can you send me screenshots of every story frame and every reach and all of you, which it's just like, but you know, this is a really nice overall report.
Nice.
But aside from that, I think that each brand has to establish what their goals are, right? Because the return on investment for a certain brand might be, okay, were there increased sales? Mm-hmm. Were there more follows on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Was there a click through to the link that the influencer was providing in their stories? So I think it's going to vary project by project. Yes, you do have the right to know the analytics, the reach of the posts. I provide reports. Joanna, I know, always does that for all her roster. But I do think that it's very hard to actually attach a number to that ROI because it's going to look different for every single project.
Mm-hmm. It definitely looks different for every single project. And I use Influence Kit because we met also. But yeah, I think it's just a lifesaver as well. And I had the same experience where a pretty big partnership that I had at one time, it was the same thing where, back to Pinterest, I showed it and the reach from Pinterest, like, you know, because that was a couple of months of partnership, it just exploded. So it was just a really, you know, and I got a really good review. It was just a really great tool to show them how far the metrics really went with all the platforms that the campaign was shared on. But I also, one of my big things that I just don't like to do is grabbing screenshots of analytics and later. And so Influence Kit takes care of all that because it's just dynamic reporting where it's always calculating live for the brand when you give them that link.
So it just came to mind that it also, as Jeanette said, one has to be aligned with the brand to see what are your expectations. So this year I turned down a very lucrative campaign that when I said no, I was like, whoa, like, but at the same time, they wanted a guarantee that somebody was going to sign up for their thousands and thousands of dollars, as much as $65,000 for their services. And I'm like, how am I going to guarantee this? And they're like, yes, we need a guarantee. I said, well, then you know what? I'm not your person. Because how am I going to guarantee that? So we let it go because I was like, there's no way that I'm going to go through the stress of guaranteeing that somebody is going to use their services. Like I don't have a crystal ball that tells me that somebody's going to do that. So we let it go.
I think the approach is different. If anybody says that they can guarantee, this is a business of people, right? Like I can't tell you when I'm going to scroll. I'm an impulse. Like I'm the person that purchases everything on social media or like I look for it. I'm like, I'm obsessed with whatever it is, right? Like, can I click on it? Can I purchase it? And then furthermore, if it's not easy for me to purchase, then I'm not going to purchase yet until like my wallet's right next to me because I am married to my couch as well. You know,
this was a big ticket item. I mean, it's like more than three cars, you know, and how can I guarantee that?
And that to me seems like an insane.
Plus, that's not who follows me, or I don't think so.
Yeah.
People who follow me are not millionaires, you know? So I was like, well, maybe I'm not your person. That's it. I can't do it. And that was it. And we parted ways nicely, you know, but it's.
And I had one brand who we did a partnership with. I would get a lot of click throughs, but they couldn't stick followers because their social wasn't good enough. And let alone like actually try to create sales because they hadn't created a good way to convert those followers. So we can do the best that we can to garner interest, but we can't control what's beyond that.
Yeah. Well, you can't be their entire marketing department.
Exactly. You know, like, that's a great way. I'm going to write that down.
I mean, the expectations are so high. I hear it all the time from the brand side as well, too. I think that and that's why I love all the things that you guys are talking about in regards to the partnerships and relationships and really believing behind, you know, having belief in whatever it is that you're representing. Because I think that's at the core. That's why influencer marketing works, right? Like you're genuinely telling me what you think about it. It's the reason that I listen to my best girlfriend, right? Like she's going to tell me the truth. You're going to tell me the truth, you know, like that's what we're buying into. Okay. So influencers, your insights are awesome! Exclamation point. You've made plenty of points of how not to do it. Can you describe what for you would be the ideal engagement?
First, a clear brief with the deliverables, the expectations, and what would mean like a very successful campaign, because I want to make the brand happy. So when I see a clear brief with clear deliverables, I get super excited. Second, trust me to know how to deliver those messages to my audience. We're professionals here. This is not a hobby for us. This is our business. This is our core business.
Yeah.
So trust me when I'm telling you that if we do X, Y, and Z, we tend to see better results, even if we can't control. Then once that campaign is live, once that partnership has launched, repost me, support me, follow me. It really helps. It helps with engagement because even if you have a tiny following, but if you're supporting the creators that you have engaged, it only makes it grow for everybody. Mm-hmm. So the more support, the more reposts, the more likes, if you comment, then you know what? The algorithm is actually going to favor that post and show it to even more people.
Yeah. Yes. I love it. Does anybody have anything else to add?
Another thing would be like, I try to discuss, are you going to put paid behind the promote? Like, are you going to promote the post or not? Because I need to know. And sometimes they're like, we don't know. And I'm like, well, if you're not going to do it, I need to know if I'm going to do it and what budget I'm going to allocate to that, because then you know, social is becoming more pay to play. And on Instagram, if I am tagging the campaign as a paid promotion, my hands are tied. I cannot promote that. I can do it on Facebook, but I can't do it on Instagram. So before that, I need the brand to know. And I've told them, I said, you know, Instagram, if the average paid Instagram post sponsored by someone and tagged as such has a significantly lower engagement rate. And everybody knows this, but I need to have that conversation with the brand and not be shy or afraid of saying that, because I want them to know that if they don't put money behind it, it might tank. And that's a possibility. And that's a conversation we need to have. If they tell me, oh, we don't care, then okay, fine. But if they tell me we're going to put money, then I know what to expect, and if, et cetera. But that those conversations, which I think for some people might be hard to have because they're like, oh, I'm going to get found out or found out of what? You know, everybody knows that paid and sponsored content just has a lower engagement overall. So it's an important conversation to have.
I like that. Shonda, you were going to add something?
Oh, yeah. The interlinking, as Jeanette was mentioning, like, because oftentimes it is where you work with the brand and it's not that they intentionally kind of drop you off, but if they don't follow you or they don't reshare your post or put it in their stories, that really is a disservice to them hiring us as an influencer. And if you're just thinking of it from like a blog perspective, interlinking is huge. That's how you tell the Google, or in our case, we're talking Instagram, the algorithm that these things go together. They should be shown to the same people. So, and I guess we're saying this out loud because brands may not realize that.
Absolutely.
As creators, we know that interlinking and sharing of content is super valuable. I mean, I even have something on my blog that says, you know, do you want to know how to support, you know, how you can help me engage, you know, like my thing, you know, share. So that is really important. If you do hire us for your product, it is super helpful to you first and foremost, and to our audiences, you know, that you want this to reach further, to simply just reshare it or engage with it.
I love it.
And one more thing, please add us to the approved list so that when we're tagging a paid collaboration, that way we're all being transparent, because these things seem so obvious. And I know we've all encountered a glitch when we're trying to tag the brand that we're working with, but they have not approved us to collaborate with them. So it really helps if you guys do that.
Yeah, I've been on vacation and had to test that like in the middle of being at the beach because we were worried it wasn't going to do right when the time comes to post. That is a really big thing.
Very frequent, actually.
Well, and I think honestly, the obvious is not really that obvious, because I think that this space, while it has been around, but it has been around for a while. It's not always been known as influencer marketing, but it has definitely been around. There's so much education that needs to happen on all ends of it. And all six of you are so well versed, and like, you are so well versed, and this is your business. So everything that you're sharing are great insights for any brand to listen into. And like, that makes a difference. That's going to impact what they do the next go around. Okay, so the next question is, why are including starting prices on media kits seen as a no-no? As one who works with a brand and manages reaching out to influencers, it takes a lot of time to go back and forth with someone to then find out that they are out of budget for us. For example, grid posts starting at $350. So why not include your rates? And I think that we kind of already talked a little bit about
that. Yeah, because every project is different.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have a rate card and it could be your standard card, your standard rates, and you can share that, but know that that's just a starting point if that's something that you want to share and negotiate from there. But, you know, I think we're all very privileged to say that, you know, we work with Joanna, who's our business manager. And that's the hardest part when it comes to this business, is negotiating and trying to come up with that magic number of what you're worth. And it's always so nice to work with somebody who's advocating that for you. I never share rates. I always say, you know, I'd love to hear more. Here's my business manager. And she can set up a call to learn more, because even she won't give a rate initially. She wants to learn the full package of what it's all about, because somebody might be saying, oh, it's just a grid post, but eventually, oh, and can you include 10 stories? And can you tweet about it? And can you, you know, so there's always, you want to learn the full package.
And I'll add, like, even it's not even just about all those extra things, like the extra posts, but maybe the product is going to include a higher setup. So I might have to rent out a studio. I might have to buy additional props just for that. I might have to go completely out of my way to shoot this. And that's going to also factor into it.
Yeah, I like that. Now, the next question we've kind of already touched on. I'll say it anyways, just in case you have anything else to add. But the question is, I'm a brand. I'm listening carefully to all of your valid points. Fantastic. What tools do you use to measure success? And I think, Yvette, you had mentioned Influence Kit mm-hmm. is something that you use. Mm-hmm. Now, and then Jeanette, you had touched on this one. Do you let brands decide the success of a marketing campaign via your channel, or do you track yourself because you are the expert? This kind of speaks to the you guys being their marketing department, which you're not. but would love to know if you have anything else to add to that.
I'm always tracking my analytics. My analytics yeah. are guiding me, whether it's sponsored or non-sponsored content. I always use that as a roadmap. Of course, I will share and post about things that I want to share, but I'm also using the analytics to understand where my community is engaging, yeah. where they're not, and try to figure out a different strategy if I see that those analytics are showing me that something's not working. So regardless of whether it's a paid post, I'm always looking at my analytics across platforms. I'm also a huge fan of Influence Kit, but I also use Facebook metrics to be able yeah. to track engagement on Instagram and Facebook as well. So, and of course, Google Analytics is huge.
Yeah. yeah.
Because we all have our own platforms. So we're always checking SEO. We're checking why people are coming to our site. Where are they exiting? Where are they staying? Yeah. So anybody who is doing this on a professional level, they're not only doing it because a brand requires it for the report, but also because we want to continue growing and serving our communities.
Yeah. And I also use Google Analytics when working with brands to decide which type of content will perform better mm-hmm. with them than others. So we know our analytics perfectly.
But also the measure of success has to be discussed beforehand. Yeah, I had one activation that back then, that was when I just had started working with Joanna 6 years ago or 5 years ago. And, you know, I was so excited. The brand was so excited. But then when the campaign was done, everybody said fabulous content, fabulous reach, fabulous photography. But then they were like, but you didn't sell enough of our product. Just not to say what it is, but it's something you wear. And I was like, wait a minute, nobody told us this. So we didn't yeah. have that conversation. So in their eyes, it was a flop because we never really discussed, which is a bad on my side too. But I somehow thought, well, you know, this is what they want. They want exposure because that's kind of like a big brand usually just wants awareness. They don't yeah. care how many click-throughs because they have enough of a huge brand is not, that's not why they're hiring you. A smaller brand might want click-throughs. A different brand yeah. might want, you know, as Jessica was saying, somebody to follow them. So when you have that really clear beforehand, that taught me a huge lesson. I always ask now, what do you want from me? Because if I think I can't deliver it, if they told me before signing that contract with which I had a lot of fun doing the content anyway, but I definitely wish I had known because I would have turned it down. If they said you have to sell X number mm-hmm. of, it wasn't jackets, but a jacket. Well, I would have said, you know what? Thank you very much. We're not doing this because I can't guarantee that.
Yeah.
But if the measure of success is a certain number of clicks or this and that, I can adjust as we go. I can create a Facebook ad. I can do, sometimes I do it, even yeah. if it's not part of the partnership, it is in my best interest. And there, you know, I want to make the brand yeah. happy as Jeanette said. So when I've worked with a certain company for 5 years now, we still have an ongoing partnership and we're so honest right now that it's like, well, tell me exactly what you want with my promotion yeah. of this so that I can hone it. And they're like, this yeah. is where we're at. I'm measuring it. They're measuring it with Influence Kit, by the way. So Influence Kit should give us some. You know. I use Influence Kit. They use Influence Kit because I use it, but I post everything in my Influence Kit and theirs. And we're gauging. And I know exactly what they want from me. And I know how I can deliver it. But if that conversation isn't had at the very, very beginning,
yeah.
then that's where I think you know, failure happens, to speak of it in a certain way.
I love that you guys want to hear how a brand wants to or is measuring success of that campaign, because I do think that oftentimes it's one of those things, like it should be obvious, right? I'm setting it up. But like, I think for me personally, what always drives me nuts is if someone feels, quote unquote, like something wasn't successful, like show me that it wasn't successful, right? Prove to me that it wasn't successful because it felt great. Look at all this content that we got, you know? But if that wasn't your goal, like you're right. Like the brand has to know what success means to them so that you guys can then be successful. Ale, you were
I'd say yes or yes. No. Say yes or no. Maybe you don't want to get to say yes to something where the expectations are not what you think you can deliver. Sorry.
Yeah, but I think you also have to give it time, because you can't report like the next week, because I mean, they're live. Somebody's going to like that Instagram post a week, a month, a year after that. So that's something that also brands have to understand, that it's an ongoing thing.
I was even just like tracking like things that people think. Not everything always makes sense. You could get a post that has a lot of likes and not a lot of saves or shares. Maybe that's good. You can get one that has a lot of saves and shares and not a lot of likes. You can have one that didn't reach as many people but converted way better. I know a lot of people too, they'll be like, they didn't ask questions in the comments. And it's also understanding just audiences in general.
Yeah,
I know like people will send me DMs on Instagram before they'll comment because they don't like to be public. Mm-hmm. People on TikTok will comment everything. It's just like understanding those platforms and like what's typically done is also really important.
Absolutely. Okay. If a client already has a great deal of marketing material, such as videos, blogs, photos that they have used in the past, can you use these instead of creating others from scratch? If the client provides this to you, does this reduce the rate you charge? I don't know if any of you have, there's strong nods. No.
No,
I mean, I think the point of them partnering with us or with an influencer is for their aesthetic, for their style, for their, I would never post, that's just not me, like stock photos on my site because I have a style, I have a brand, I have a, you know, aesthetic. And there's times like say for a campaign where it's like, okay, we're doing this for No Kid Hungry or Feeding America. And can you share this photo on your Instagram stories? I would totally do something like that on stories, but to live on my blog, that's, I probably wouldn't want that from the get go.
Especially on Instagram, they come for you. It will perform so horribly and it will ruin our relationship. I do not want to post any bad content because they're going to go, that is so addy. I didn't follow you to be ads. I like when you do ads that are authentic and fun, but this is horrible. Unfollow.
So I will use stock photos, and I do on my website because I designed it as a magazine. So, and I did it purposely for that. It's not a personal blog. It has collaborators. It's different voices, different things. So it's not exactly my personal blog. But that said, I have had partnerships where we have used stock photos that, or either they gave me or I used, or but I purchased, of course, to license it for this activation. But that does not mean that I'm going to charge less, because also they are paying me for my social media presence, for my they are paying me, even if they put money behind it. This is another thing to understand, is that even why doesn't a brand just push out the content through their Facebook? Maybe they have way more followers than we do, because they're trying to reach other people. And even if you're paying money behind, like I have three Facebook pages that I use for marketing for clients. The content that I create on the blog will perform differently on each one of those Facebook pages. Sometimes I give them access to one, to two, or to three, and that has a different price as well. One of them skews more Spanish, the other one is only in the United States, the other one skews younger. So depending on what they want, I realized a while back, oh, they're paying me for the people they can reach through my Facebook pages. And it depends on what kind of people are following those Facebook pages. Can they reach this new audience, even if they have a huge following on their own? Does that make sense? So if they get caught up on, oh, but you're not the picture. And I'm like, yeah, but what about the years it took me? 8 years to have these three Facebook pages with all these different kinds of followers.
You're like, right? This is not easy.
Well, I you know, I promoted, I paid money to you know, promote the pages. So there's a certain amount of investment that goes into creating the platforms that we all have. Yeah, and we busted our buns for it. So that's where the money that they're paying us is. That's why we're valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think during the webinar, we talked about exclusivity, or maybe we talked about it in the podcast. I don't know. We've been talking. How long will an exclusivity last? Do you guys have you had partnerships like that? Do you, because I know
it depends.
It's not great.
It depends on how long the campaign is. If it's just a one-time thing, then for me, a usual going exclusivity is like 30 days, you know, a month. But if it's a year-long partnership, obviously it's going to be a year-long partnership and a year-long exclusivity. So it just depends on the project. And that's kind of my going thing when it comes to exclusivity.
Okay. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to decide.
Yeah.
And also there's a range, right? Because for some Instagram campaigns, it can be 3 days before posting and 3 days after posting. Mm-hmm. But then you have other brands that don't want you working with a competitor, even if it's a one-off, for 6 months. I've even seen clauses for a year that we negotiate down. But for me, if you're not willing to pay for that year, then it's kind of ridiculous to do a one-off and then pay for a year of exclusivity. You're better off looking for a longer term relationship and enjoy that year in which you're already paying that creator for their time. Because with exclusivity, a lot of people don't understand. It's not just banning other competitors from accessing that creator's platform. It's just that you're preventing that creator from so many different opportunities that you have to evaluate that cost. And that's why exclusivity, on average for me, it will increase the price 30%. But if it's a longer term exclusivity, let's say a year, then I have to factor in all the satellite media tours that I won't be able to do, all the live events that I won't be able to host, the conferences that I won't be attending on behalf of certain brands. So it's not just my Instagram.
Yeah.
There's so many other different platforms, as Lorraine had mentioned. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Now, this next question, you guys are not nano influencers, but you already know that. You guys are more macro influencers, but I think the question is still pretty relevant, because the question is it rude to ask nano influencers, and think of it from your perspective as well too, for their outtakes with no additional compensation?
Oh, I've only been asked recently, actually.
For outtakes?
Yes. And I'm even considering which ones I'm going to send. Because I'm like, you know, am I going to send them everything? Probably not. I'm thinking I'm not going to do that. But it's, I think that if there's also the word, a very nice word that is very useful, which is no.
Yeah.
Yep. Honestly, I've seen some agencies manage this in a more elegant way. They will ask you to submit, let's say for each post, they'll ask you to submit 2 or 3 pictures for consideration.
Okay.
And whatever you have submitted as a draft becomes part of the project. So they could reuse that on social, but that's discussed beforehand.
Yeah.
If you are asking an influencer of any size for outtakes after the work has been delivered,
I believe
it would be fair for the influencer to ask for additional compensation, because that is exceeding the original deliverables. I don't care if it's an outtake. I mean, that is outside the scope of work that originally was agreed upon.
It's the same thing with photographers. You know, when you get into an agreement, you say they're going to deliver these many photos, and photographers will tell you right then and there, I'll give you like a gallery of 30 photos, you know, for a certain price, and you choose your top 15, or I give you the 15 and you get the 15. And if you don't like those, then you have to, you know, pay, because that was discussed beforehand. And then again, if you're asking for additional marketing materials, a whole nother price.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Several of you have said that your first step was starting a blog. Where did you start a blog? How did you get people to read it?
I didn't time.
I guess if I were giving someone that advice, I didn't start that way. I started on Instagram because it was kind of like that accidental thing. I entered a contest for a brand and promoting for them, and it went from there. But in any case, the advice would be to start the blog first, in my opinion, and to do it. I started with Wix. I wouldn't do it that way in the, you know, if I had hindsight to go back, because I ended up converting to WordPress. But that's where I would say to start your blog, is on a WordPress site, because there's just so much control that you can have over it. So many different plugin features. And then how do you get people to read it? That's all that whole bundle of SEO and getting it to talk to Google, which is a lot. And that's a lot of work. Yeah. Spend a lot of our time trying to, you know, looking at analytics and trying to keep those numbers up and those readers coming and those viewers coming. So
that makes sense. All right. Is it kosher to ask for an influencer's average engagement before hiring them? I've paid up for influencers with big followings, only to learn after the fact that they have very limited engagement. So a resounding yes.
That's totally fair.
I don't think you have to ask us. I think you can just, if you're talking about engagement, like likes and
comments,
then that's what engagement usually is. So that's already available. You can pull up reports, things like that. Talking about like reach and stuff and saves and shares if you can't.
There are so many apps that actually will do that for you, as Jessica's mentioning. So even without asking, you have access to that information.
I would say just be very careful about, like, when it comes to engagement rate. There's so many people and who will kind of bolster those with comment pods and like, so it's very important to also, you know, besides just asking, then go through. These look like authentic comments. You can click on the likes and see who's liked it. You know, do these accounts look like they're in my target area? If I'm reaching a US audience, do they look like they're US? Do most of them have like a profile picture?
Yeah. Are they purchased likes?
You can follow someone's purchase likes very easily. Literally, you just have to go through the likes, and all the names do not sound like names.
Well, it's taking the time to do that, because you guys are more than a number. And while someone can ask for an average engagement number, you're so much more than that. So any brand should be looking at your entire feed, your entire like roster of like social networks that you're a part of. Is this the right fit for me? And if it is, then I'm going to say yes. And like, how engaged are their audience? Read through the comments. I mean, to your point, you're right. Like, you don't know who's part of an influencer pod, that it's just constant, like all of these posts, and maybe it is emojis, but maybe they're consistent emojis, and you see them engaging. So there's so many levels to it. But that's also something that I plant my flag on and feel very strongly about. Like, if there was one silver bullet metric in marketing, like, we'd all have it figured out, but there never is. Correct. That's why, like, in this world that we live in, it depends. It depends on what your goal is. It depends on like how much you have to invest. There are so many like just kind of things that you have to take into account in order to get that answer, and in order to get most of your answers. I'll get off of my soapbox now. Okay, so this one is, we're a fairly new, small luxury fine jewelry brand and just started an influencer program. We cannot afford to pay influencers on top of gifting our product, since it is such a high price point. How should we go about asking influencers for a gifted collaboration?
Well, as I mentioned, I think during the webinar, consider it a barter deal. So let's say, I'm just going to pull a number out of my head. Let's say that your product is valued at $1,000. You can approach an influencer and say, okay, let's do a barter deal equivalent to what I'm going to gift you. And that way you are being transparent. You explain the situation, and if it's a good fit and the content creator or influencer agrees to that, then it's fine. But you're being very transparent, and I think that will save you so many headaches down the road.
Agreed.
I think there's two things. There's one, making sure maybe you're casting a wide net or just being very particular about that. For instance, talking about small things, I would love a nice, you know, necklace, but if I'm thinking about what I'm posting and most of my photos are far away, it's not going to work in my feed. Almost no matter, like, I'm going to ask for money, because I can't just, like, I'd have to be very crafty about how I do it versus someone who does a lot of tight shots might have an easier job promoting that. And another thing is maybe even considering loaning it out and paying that person. It's something, mm-hmm. you know, that works as well.
True.
That's a really good tip. Too. Like if you're, because you're right. Like if you have wide shots, no one's ever going to see that necklace. But then it really does push the brand to really dig in and take a look at what all of your feeds look like. You ladies are doing great. I promise we're almost at the end of it. Okay. What are you looking for in a brand to want to work with them?
That it fits my lifestyle, that it fits what I do, you know, like, if it's something that I, it just doesn't, goodness, like, how would I explain this? Like a tool to, what do you call this? To drill holes. Like maybe my husband would use it, but I personally never post about that. And I just don't, it's not a fit. So something that really somebody looked at my feed and said, oh, look, this fits seamlessly.
Yeah,
that's kind of it. It could be the best brand in the world, but if it doesn't really, you know, like, for example, I don't do anything weight loss. I don't care how much they pay me. It could be, and I've been on food stamps, so I know what I'm saying that I would say, still say no, because I've had an eating disorder. And anybody who's read through my Instagram or anywhere would know that about me and would know that I am very adamant about not promoting anything about, you know, that would negatively impact somebody's body image or whatever. Somebody else might be a better fit. But so for me, it's about being a good fit. That's it.
Agreed. Now, how important is it for you guys to build a relationship with the brands that you work with?
I think it's super
important because you never know where your relationship will take you and how it can grow and how it can progress. And, you know, it might be, you know, from a couple blog posts or a couple things on Instagram that eventually is traveling to learn more about their products. Or it could turn into, you know, a media segment where you're, you know, so, I mean, it could keep growing and keep evolving. So I think if you have a good relationship, I mean, the business and the products and the services could keep growing.
Also, I was a spokesperson for one certain brand that actually was thanks to Jeanette because she couldn't do it. But I ended up knowing so much about the brand that I didn't need to read anything. Like I could do interviews for radio, TV or whatever. And I didn't have to read anything because I knew it so well. And I was a user. So that I think that works super organically.
And relationships are key.
Yeah, they're key. But it also, the brand, the girl that's working at marketing, the agency that hired you, like there's a lot of relationships there that you want to nurture. Because as I said before, if I do good, you do good, everybody will do good. So it's like it's a relationship, but it also has like a lot of responsibility to it because you want to do good because everybody wants you to do good. So,
yeah, absolutely. Now, how can brands support and help you as a creator outside of booking them for paid campaigns?
I mean, I think Jeanette said it best, or was it Lorraine who said it regarding, you know, shares, you know, having the client sharing your content. I mean, it just seems like that's such a no-brainer. You know, they're already paying you for these amazing photos, for your natural collaboration, and just for them to share your story on Instagram, on their stories or their Facebook posts. I mean, I could be working with a brand that has millions of followers and people who already love that brand. So now they have a Mexican recipe where they can tie that brand. Why wouldn't they want to share it? So it just baffles me that, you know, sometimes they ask, you know, everything from us, but then they don't turn around and promote it, which would help all of us in the end.
Tag us.
And there's so many others, like, you know, talk about like Facebook, you know, if you're tagging on Facebook, I like it if you're going to tag me on Facebook. I like if you're going to put a link back to my blog post in your newsletter or do something that encourages them to go in and see that. Like, we like that too. Mm-hmm.
So as they were both saying, for me, the tag is important because last year I did an activation that was shared profusely on media and people told me, oh, we saw you on blah, blah, blah platform, on this blah, blah platform. But Joanna said they could have tagged you and they didn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a kind of person, maybe because I practice yoga, I kind of practice detachment a lot, but at the same time, I do. It's really a way of life in general for me right now. But at the same time, it would have been nice. Of course it would have been nice.
Excellent. Okay. Final question. This is a scenario one too. I'm working on a startup that can create a new source of income for influencers. Most of the influencers I approach never even see the message. What's the best way for me to get their attention? And I wish that they had put whether they were DMing or emailing.
I get a lot of emails I don't even answer, but maybe they all just sound like so the same. That you're like, oh, if I answered every single one, that's a waste of my time. So,
yeah, they usually, I think there's one every day that's promising me a new income source. And so, and then I have to take the time to research it to see, you know, what's happening. Is this, did they just start out and I have to invest in them as much as they have to invest in me? And then it might not work. There's so many things. And for instance, I know like someone wants to have like an app for travel. And no, I don't want to direct to your app because I'm going to make more money directing to my blog. So there's just so many things that end up happening in that sense that you really have to show true value to the influencer.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. It's less about like what you say. Well, obviously don't make it so generic, but it's less about what you say and more about the value that you can bring to you that's going to make you click and, you know, not have to research without getting something at the end of it just to find out that like, no, this is not going to be the right fit. So,
and I would add to that sometimes the way that you craft an email makes a huge difference, because if you call me by my name and you take the time to spell it correctly, okay, you have my attention. If you mention to me why you are reaching out, what you saw from my content that called your attention, or if you know somebody who knows me, then I'll keep on reading, you know. But there's so many emails that are so spammy, or the DMs that start, hey love, or hey darling, or hey doll, I delete those immediately because I don't know who this person is. So if you're cold emailing me, at least put the effort to try to make it personal.
Yeah, at this point we can definitely tell a cold email. Yeah, the ones that even I remember in general are the ones that said like, you know, I love when you wrote about this, or when you shared this post and you went here. And it only takes like one thing. And I know when we're reaching out to someone, that's what we do. You know, that we are referencing, you know, I loved when I listened to the podcast and you said this, you know, this thing really resonated with me. So the same thing is that they really just have to be more personable, because we do get inundated with emails on a daily basis and they often are spammy or just like you're on a list. And I get some of that too, like Yvette said, because my Instagram kind of starts with Black lifestyle influencers. So I get a lot of, hey, Black.
Oh my gosh.
So, and so, you know, you're just on a list.
That's awful.
It's awful, but we're used to it. This just happens on a daily basis. So a lot more personality, you know, where you actually care to work with me. That means
something. Yeah. Yeah. I make it personal. Relationships matter. You guys are a business. Like it is, you know, negotiations, all of the things. You guys have brought so many insights. I could probably talk to you for another hour as well too, but I appreciate you guys taking all of the time that you have with me today, providing your insights and your tips for the brands who are listening. Thank you again so much.
This is like a vacation. I love doing these things because I'm not thinking about
it. Great. We had so many great questions and answers come out of our discussion, from understanding how long exclusive partnerships last to how a smaller brand can afford creators. And they even shared what they really thought about that affiliate structure. There were so many great insights and tips to come from the Fireside Chat and this conversation. It's really too hard to summarize it in the end. What I can say is I left this conversation with an even deeper understanding of the business of being a creator. They make it look so easy that it's kind of easy to forget.
But these women are a force of nature and by no uncertain terms impressive. Creators are the best way for a brand to truly reach their existing audience and find new ones. Treating creators like your brand depends on them could not be truer, because it does. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. I want to hear what you like. If you're interested in watching the Fireside Chat with Jeanette, Yvette, Ale, Jessica, Lorraine, and Shonda, influencers talking brands, what makes them say yes, visit the live events section at grin.co. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. Until next time, keep grinning.